third piece is inclusiveness, and also peace is something related to human dignity, sharing of power.
And I think just like many aspects for the peace, maybe personal peace, for the inner field peace, and also sometimes we talk about the cultural peace, but it is not easy to happen to. For example, we were talking about cultural or regional, but sometimes maybe they have a different country, they have a different interpretation for the original things.
I have to say I have a problem with fighting for peace. To me, peace is serenity. Peace is being open to other people's ideas and being able to feel at one with it. And the moment you have you and me and fights between what you believe in and what you think other people should believe in, then there's no peace. Even if you fought for it, then it's not real peace.
Taking on this aspect, I mean, that could be a statement, which I respect entirely, and if it's something kind of metaphysical concept that we cannot obtain, what are we really evaluating? And one possible answer would be that we're evaluating at the various levels or kind of strata or layers that could reach to this metaphysical concept. And therefore, what becomes more interesting is a definition of those layers, of those strata that we can, not so much the layer of peace, but the opposite, the peace's layers.
I feel that perhaps it's been difficult to talk about it in language, because I feel language is a medium and a material that makes boundaries and barriers.
I just wonder if the deferment of peace is problem with modernity, in the sense that it would seem the mere in nature the survival of the fittest is already a system that has built in conflict in it. And it seems ultimately peace is to accept that there are such conflicts in nature.
When we say peace, we immediately think of the opposite of peace, what is not peaceful. But can peace be defined as something independently, like exclude its opposition?
I'd like to comment on this lady say about the nature. Actually, in China philosophy, the Taoist, they seem to come to harmony. If the value of harmony can be accepted, then everybody has the space. They are just cooperation. The conflict came from the different value. They think we are supreme. Once this ideology flourishes in the mass, then they will get a momentum. That's where war comes from. The leader can lead the war, but for big war, they need to some sort of ideology background. And this background comes from that everybody not have the space for the others.
It's kind of interesting what this young lady earlier said, because it seemed to me peace is not just the opposite of war as we know it. I think the war and peace is within us also. If we keep thinking that there is this ideal state of peace and anything that's beyond that is undesirable, then somehow I believe it's difficult to find peace. As she was speaking, I was thinking of once I was in a spiritual city in India, I forgot the name just now, where a lot of the sick and people who were chronically ill, have no chance of living, would go there and just be at peace with the state that they were in. And I remember looking at these people and thinking, goodness, these people are, in my terms, in a miserable state, but they don't have that miserable expression on their face. They seem to be at peace with their fate. And I guess ultimately, if you are not thinking of peace or unpeace as opposite, but embracing existence, then that would perhaps allow one to come closer to peace, perhaps.
But I have a question. Is the state of peacefulness a natural construct? Is it like hunger, for example? Is it an inborn kind of thing? If not, when do we start to feel peaceful or not peaceful? Then when do we draw this kind of relation in the mind? Yeah.
One of the quotes from your video was about that peace meant freedom, but not stepping on anyone else's freedom. And I think that there's so many places in the world right now where peace is not being obtained, whether it's through war or just all kinds of like violations of human rights, that while we can talk about internal peace, we still definitely need to address like a lot of external issues that are, you know, in terms of human rights. And
maybe we could question the, I would maybe bring this question into in terms of speciality and whether space can be peaceful, like an archive for me. I was thinking we are here, so by chance it's a cultural space, and maybe better than the museum and other spaces, a library or an archive, being surrounded by books which are very porous. I mean, here is Asian Art Archive, so it's limited in terms of, it has its own border, but it contains so many ideas and visions, and you cannot be crushed by a car or armed by no one by being here. I mean, we feel completely, it's like a security zone containing, I mean, a kind of mini world in itself. And also it's free to come and use the space and just like use your time and space as you want. So,
I mean, again, my ideas of what peace might mean in my life or for others are completely entangled with the people that I've been learning from and working with. So my definition keeps changing, and my understanding keeps changing, but I keep hearing from so many that peace is like a process. It's not like a something that you arrive at. It's a constant negotiation.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a state of being that once and for all you just reach, but rather a constant negotiation, constant compromise or process. So that's something that I think a lot about when I try to define it for myself.
There is this logic of as soon as there is a contact, there is a possible conflict as well. I mean, that goes together. And I was thinking of course, this duality that we are referring a lot to, the peace opposed to war and violence and so on. But maybe there is a possible kind of displacement that can be operated, and that is to replace peace, not by the word harmony, but by the word happiness. Because often it's more something that is interiorized. When peace is, of course, its relation between the interior and the exterior with the other. When the happiness is more like something that is more interiorized, then avoid the contact.
How can artists to exercise the notion of peace? And I think it's very interesting what I've experienced is all kinds of conversation will be happen. They exchange information, they have what happened immediately is this intimacy and empathy. And another thing is to embrace the opposite, because what I experienced in the US is people still have very strong opinion about people. And people can really sit down and have a conversation of, oh, where you come from, like.
Can I ask you kind of a more personal question?
Yeah, sure.
So do you think people in Hong Kong have the same kind of reaction to people of different ethnicities? Or what about you, your family, or Hong Kong people?
I think in Hong Kong, I didn't feel the openness of dialogue that happened to talk about the issue like this. I think somehow it's because the natural of the city is it's very not really commercial driven, but people landed here to have to work on their business. So somehow they need to impress the differences in these circumstances. But in terms of have more in-depth conversation, I don't find it happen here.
You mean business is, can be a very good pacifier?
I mean, to say it differently, you feel that Hong Kong is a cosmopolitan city. It's an international city in every sense. You feel it is cosmopolitan.
Mm-hmm. From my experience, try to understand different ethnic groups, living style in Hong Kong. Most of the people, maybe for Western people, foreign people, he's okay. They would think he's good. But Asian people, the Hong Kong people not really understand their needs or everything. Because I cooperate with some Bangladesh center in Hong Kong. Mm-hmm. Most of the people, they think they are so poor. They work in a construction site, but in fact, they are not. They are really well educated. And 1,000 person in Hong Kong only. But most of them, they have a well educated. As a graduate from university, they come from Hong Kong to work for the trading company and for their materials or everything. But most of the people, they think, oh, they're black or something like that, or something like that, they discriminate them too.
I think Hong Kong people are very half-paid. They will internalize the discrimination. They're not outspoken like the Americans, although internally they're probably equally critical or discriminating, and they put people down, but they would just distance themselves from people that they do not endorse, but they will not openly go and criticize them. I think it's a different culture.
So,
Ha-hei,
what does that mean?
They would not like to embarrass the other people with a different view or different background if they can avoid it.
I think I understand what you're saying. Ha-hei, two words, and then like such a big...
amongst my social circle with my friends, I have very different views from my friends, but people with different views continue to still socialize at various levels, mm-hmm. where they can meet. And where they can't meet, they just avoid talking mm-hmm. about those issues.
I see.
For example, I suppose it doesn't matter to discuss it because it's a well-known fact that the Hong Kong people look down on Indians, okay, because of cultural differences. The Indians can be as rich or powerful, but they're still Indians, okay? A friend of mine sort of recently married an Indian doctor, very eminent doctor. And she announced it, friends would just say, oh, congratulations, and full stop. Okay? So they would not be critical, but they would not be enthusiastic with their endorsement. They just acknowledge it politely and say congratulations. That's not the best way to achieve peace, but it's another.
But I'm thinking, it's actually the least one can do to keep peace somehow. If you think
mm-hmm.
like on the opposite direction, although it's not really from your heart what you're doing, but it's a gesture that is the least you can do to maintain the state of peace. And I'm just wondering, one thing I want to mention is understanding. I just wonder, like, okay, if we find out that we cannot agree on somebody else's opinions, then we can try to understand. But how to emphasize the importance of understanding and how to kind of... I think all of us knows that to understand is important, but at the same time, I don't think anyone understands enough that the importance of understanding, to listen.
I think what you said about this ha-hei notion, this politeness, it's the ultimate goal is to avoid confrontation.
Mm-hmm.
And then sometimes you avoid confrontation and with good deeds, with good means, but then that can also lead to indifference, yeah, because you never solve the problem. Pretty typical.
That's what I meant when I say it's not the way to achieve peace.
Yeah.
It's to avoid war, which is the opposite of peace. as you say, ultimate peace comes from a genuine understanding of people with a different view or a different background or different practice or different culture, whatever. To be able to be open to others and enjoy the differences, I think, is the ultimate state of peace.
Ajahn talked about his experience going to a conference about freedom of expression and freedom of speech. And of course, everybody embraced this idea. But then what was strange to him was that nobody talked about freedom of listening. So I think that there's another crucial part to achieve peace, which is not often talked about.
What does he mean, freedom of listening?
Because everyone is trying
freedom not to listen, or freedom to listen.
Because everyone
can listen with
yeah.
your own perception instead of listening openly. As you're saying, you reminded me of a book I was reading long, long time ago by Krishnamurti, the Indian philosopher. And he was talking about peace. And he was saying the ultimate way towards peace is to be able to listen. The art of listening, and then that will lead you to understanding, and with proper understanding, then you achieve peace. I guess that's sort of what harmonizes with what you said.
Because you keep emphasizing listening, understanding, and I think it's also very contextual. I'm not good at taking this topic in a very abstract level, but what make me feel interested in this text and come to this workshop tonight is because I have a question in mind recently that is, and it's very contextual to Hong Kong society these few years, because I think those of us that have been living here these few years can feel the energy that there is constantly a lot of social movement. And the model or even the language that we use is a resistant model and confrontational model. Okay. And it's not often that I hear the word peacemaking, except as far as I know there are Sun Heng in Ning Lan, they are doing a big project that is the Peace Woman Project. But in our, you know, down-to-earth struggles, they are always emphasizing the confrontational aspect.
Mm.
Okay, the government take this side and then we take the opposite. Or we take this side and then the government take the opposite. Yeah, so this is where my what's up to these days,
mm-hmm.
and peace, on the other hand, for me personally, is of course this very spiritual thing. But I think the dialogues that will be more beneficial is that it has to be contextual, because like this gentleman, he raised the issue that okay, so-called Chinese philosophy in some aspect has the idea of harmony, right? But
Taoist.
If we really use the word in modern China, that is Wu Hai and then Ho Hai, so it could be very repressive. In different corner of the world, I think the situations and the context is so different.
I don't think it means that we ought to or we can give up on looking for a notion of, sharing what can be peace, which maybe comes back to your point about being a process, and I would rather choose the word to make, and the idea that I think either of you mentioned about peace being an achievement, that it's a civilized thing, maybe, that which is actually terrible, that we are in a big mess, but this is the world ever not in a big mess. hinting at the ethics of listening. I feel these issues are related.
As I mentioned, Hong Kong is going to an area of violence of speech. Actually, sometimes you can see an example, even in the Sunday, Victoria Park. They don't even give a chance for the opposite to speak at word, just loudly. That means I speak loudly, then I'm right, okay? I'm supreme, so I can do anything. Just like, for example, democracy. If two wolves have a meeting with a sheep, see tonight what we are going to eat, then you know the result, okay? That means how you have to respect each other, even morality. So come to the word harmony. Is already content, as you say, not the harmony itself, but some your interpretation of some kind of people. Their harmony is what you don't like. So you think the harmony. So that will mix up the concept. Once you mix up the concept, you think harmony is you can abandon it. Okay, that concept. For the world, even for ecology, then all talk about how to be harmony, to be in a peaceful way. But sometimes, because our concept, our perception, we usually have some, even peace, we can distort the meaning. What do you think of peace? You suppress me, then call peace? But then the peace itself has a core value, not as other people interpretation. So I refer to the harmony. Because someone think that explain harmony in different way, then you think harmony is not a good thing. That's a trouble. That's where prejudice comes from.
I wonder if peace cannot be compared with equilibrium, in that they can never be constant. Once you've got equilibrium, you will start moving away from it, and then you will strive for equilibrium again, and then it goes on. Perhaps peace is something like that, you know.
But if you lead to peace to equilibrium or to harmony, then it means that peace is something passive, and then the opposite will be activism, being active. So in this case, we all want to be on the other side, and this kind of passive state is not tolerable because the whole system is in movement. How can we stay still, harmonized or waiting for or happy in our bubble when things are non-stop changing around us? Sometimes we need to adjust from this sphere to this one.
Well, I guess what I'm saying is one can never hope to have constant peace. And I guess politics, social movements, and arguments and fights are all moving towards the next status of peace, perhaps. And without the opposite, you also don't try to achieve the peace. So it's perhaps in nature that we're in a constant state of flux.
Active peace.
Active peace.
I would like to respond to your sharing too. I think the confrontation model is not a regional phenomenon. I think it is a global phenomenon also, because it is a kind of fundamentalism.
Why we have conflicts? Because we have different opinions. And why we understand we have different opinions, that's because we are at the same kind of platform when we are talking, speaking with languages. If I'm kind of communicating with an artwork and something that is not in the system of, or not in the logic of language, or maybe not only language, or not in the same system, something that different from the system, then perhaps it kind of gives us more space, and perhaps we will try to listen or see it more carefully, which sometimes when we communicate with language or communicate with the same object we are so familiar with, that we are so confident with, that we thought we understand, but actually we didn't. We don't. Like, somehow people say, I cannot be translated, or people don't understand art. This is the ambiguous code. Actually, it's something that that's important for people who try to understand better.
But sometimes the nature of art can be very passive.
Mm-hmm.
and how can you use art as a function to really negotiate the idea of peace? And to go back to Anthony's idea about the confrontational model itself, it's so not peaceful sometimes, it's so exhausting, and sometimes you give up. And then the act of resistance, of course, is so important also in art. But then can we try to think about this in terms of negotiation, and the constant negotiation of the peace, and to achieve that kind of dialogue that makes it active?
I think one thing may be to maybe that we have to distinguish between to resist and to refuse.
Yeah.
To refuse as in to disagree. To disagree as not necessarily meaning to confront or to become aggressive, but then there is a certain affirmation, a certain assertion that you are making, and you in a certain process of being together with other people, by doing that you are actually contributing. By disagreeing, by refusing and expressing that, you are to others.
Yeah.
You are actually contributing to a peace process.
That's what I meant by negotiation, and then you open up this platform.
Mm-hmm.
But to respond also a little bit, what I see the social movement in the past 2 or 3 years is it's making a difference, is that, I mean, maybe before you, the resistance is so strong that your opponent is not willing to speak to you. So there's no point. Whatever you do, they just ignore you, you know? But the thing is, I mean, to achieve the peace, the state of peace, if peace is often in a state of balance, then you have to find a way to be able to talk or get them to listen. And also you have to listen to them. And how can art, if we all believe in art, I mean, achieve that?
For me, the difficulty today is that Art is not positioned outside of the political. It's not always on the side of peace. It's often entangled within the very institutions and compromises that maybe we would like to see it resist. I know that in my project, I want to think somewhat naively that my projects are somehow outside of all of those compromises, but they're caught up in them. And what it would mean to be on the side of peace is very hard to define, and often one ends up supporting precisely what one didn't set out wanting to support. But I mean, that's the difficulty of being an artist or being a curator or being an architect, being a practitioner embedded in a social context, which is that you're never outside of what you're resisting. You're caught up in the same system. Often in these conversations, this week here in Hong Kong and the last few months, I'm just interested in how everybody defines hospitality, since Kant himself also raises this question and seems to suggest that hospitality would be understood in relationship to inviting the stranger into the home. And that may be culturally specific, that may not be the model that we would each enact, but what would hospitality mean for each of you? And would it be linked to this question of peace, as I link it, or as I think Kant links it?
I think it has a lot to do with trusting other people, and if you could build up a society where you can trust someone else, that they don't have their own motives that might trample on other people's freedoms. So like a lot of things about, a very basic thing about inviting people into your home is how dangerous would that be, right? Of course. So you have to be able to kind of accept other people, or otherwise you have to risk yourself. Art, a lot of times, is a test of how tolerant a society is. But then it's kind of interesting to see how people could, how the society would react to expression, basically. If you do things in Hong Kong, you're most likely to get chased off or something.
I wonder if anyone has any thoughts about why it is that it's a rather new idea that peace is something that we automatically take for granted as something that is good. The definition of it might be, however, processual or conflictual peace, but this is a historical event, it seems. If we would have had a discussion like this 300 years ago, we might not have seen peace as a necessarily good thing.
Can you be more specific?
Well, I was just thinking about, you mentioned in the opening of Kant's essay, and he says that this idea of peace ultimately leads to this idea of the peace of the graveyard. And so some people might say, well, we need to redefine peace in ways which are more open, but even if one looks at the history of religion, it seems that, or the history of politics, there were days when to be a hero and to die in war was the highest value, and people would have discussed why this is the highest value and why you become a hero. And nowadays we take peace to be something that's a given, a normative given that we strive for.
The definition of peace is certainly an interesting one. your definition of peace is probably very different from somebody else's. And very often war is created by exactly that, because my notion of peace is different from yours. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and we discussed the differences of our definition, but all of us, the word itself symbolizes something that's utopian, that is good, that needs to be preserved, that needs to be promoted. And I wonder how we maneuvered ourselves into such a situation where peace is something that we might disagree what it means, but it's something that all of us think is important and valuable to be promoted.
We talked about the Chinese definition of harmony, and I guess in relation to what you're saying, when a website that is illegal or is controversial is taken down in China, it's called being harmonized. So this definition of harmony is it's a way of keeping the peace in the country.
That's kind of what I was trying to say, in that in order to achieve utopia, you can also be very restrictive, because you're trying to say that we must agree on a common norm, and that's not very liberating very often.
Up to now, we still have global village, okay, but you don't have passport. You even can't go through any border, okay? So we are still in the process of going to the next century or something. So what I mean is, peace might have some condition, have some rule that we are all agree with, or have full negotiation, full struggle, or finally compromise, and we start to a certain level of peace, and we are gradually towards the utopian idea of well, everybody is the brothers and sister, and then that I think in this, even in the 21st century, is still not easy to achieve.
I don't think it would ever be achieved. For precisely what I said.
No, but it needs
to be achieved.
Exactly. I mean, in the architectural field, we have the example of Brasilia, when people thought a utopia can be created, an architect, you know, went into great length in creating a city that's going to be utopian. But nobody wanted to live there in the end, because that's somebody else's idea of utopia and not other people's idea. So I think if we feel that we can all sit here and agree on a common peace, we're probably in the dead end.